everybody. Welcome to Kush and Kai. I'm Kai.
I'm Kush. What's good, y'all?
Fuck yeah. All right. It's another episode. Hey, and there's producer Heike. How are you, sir?
Hola, senor.
Hola. Hola, Coca-Cola. What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about 1993 So I Married an Axe Murderer, starring Mike Myers, Nancy Travis, Anthony LaPaglia. This is actually producer Heike's suggestion this week.
Fantastic.
What about this movie is it that you like?
Well, I don't know. Well, first off, you know how everybody has like a movie, one movie that they've seen more than any other movie. It's just like a go-to. Mm-hmm. This is that movie for me. I've seen this movie more than any other single movie on the planet. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. How did you get acquainted with this movie?
I don't remember. I don't remember the first time I saw it.
Wow.
What was the sixth through ninth time seeing it? Oh.
I don't want to say.
Oh, my.
Oh, no. Okay. Oh, mysterious. Wow. Just like Mrs. X. Oh, of course.
Crazy.
It's a comfort. Well, it's my comfort movie.
Yeah. Kai, what do you feel about this movie?
I have a soft spot in my heart for all of the San Francisco-based movies that are out there.
And this is another Bay Area collection for the Kush and Kai catalog. I think this is like the fourth, maybe fifth movie we've done in the San Francisco.
Something like that.
Yeah. Should be more. Should be more. So that's when Heike suggested we do this, I was like, this movie's always left a sour taste in my mouth. I remember when this came out, this was just after Wayne's World. Mike Myers is kind of at the height of his power. This before Austin Powers. Before Indeed. Austin Powers, I should emphasize. This movie should have been a home run. I should actually have the same feelings producer Heike has for this movie.
I largely have the same feelings, producer.
Well, you guys are the same age, so it is.
It's clouded by living in San Francisco and being that right in the pocket of just like, oh my gosh, it's all the things and observational humor and Mike Myers from the time.
There's a lot of great San Francisco in this, and there's a lot of great Mike Myers in this. Like, there's good in this movie. There's fun in this movie.
But you think it's an age divide?
I think if I was your age, I might actually have the same feelings, but because I friends my age share the same feelings that you guys did. Like, this was always a quotable movie where I was talking about, head down, kid, pants! Like, we're, like this, but the plot overall was just lacking for me. I don't know why, like, there's great in this movie, and that's why I didn't hesitate to go, let's do this.
To me, it's such a perfect plot as a vehicle for just a funny movie, right? It's nothing more, nothing less. It's sort of like a textbook. It's very textbook sort of vehicle for telling jokes. That's what's kind of comforting about it. Is it doesn't try to be and fail at being something much bigger than it is.
Well, much like our episode on True Lies, I went on a mission to find this movie. It's available on iTunes and it's available on Amazon Prime. It's rentable. I don't have a problem renting the price. I do have a problem with my Wi-Fi, and I don't want a movie that takes 90 minutes to watch to take 4 hours to watch. So I went to go to Amoeba Records to find this movie. Went through the same story with True Lies, only I did not find it in any of the rows. Went up to the desk clerk there, and I was like, hey, man, So I Married an Axe Murderer. Where should I look for it? And they say A, B, and C. I said, I've already done that. And then this dude starts chiming in. He may have been full of shit. I choose to think, like, the words he was using, the vocabulary he was speaking, like, this is a thing he's done before. And this man was, for 24 hours to his story, was Mike Myers' stand-in for this movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer. What he told me about this is the script was never finished. He told me that Nancy Travis had not been cast yet and that the woman they were using was wearing a green screen bodysuit and was going to be digitally morphed in. This does not sound like stuff that's available in 1993. However, this man sold it like $1 million.
Oh, man. I want to see the green screen test stuff where they morphed in the non-actress. That would be gold.
I think you just met a sociopath.
Possibly. I got his email address. I asked him to be on tonight's show, and he Hollywooded us. But
oh man, yeah.
So
he maybe we'll add this interview to the end of the episode.
No, it's never happened. It's never happened.
Perhaps
we can green screen him in.
perhaps we'll find him on Grindr. Either way, we are talking about So I Married an Axe Murderer, and this movie is, again, just for me, having it on and swooning at great shots of the Golden Gate Bridge and Alcatraz. Downtown and Alcatraz. It is fantastic.
We take our way up to North Beach through that beautiful helicopter shot, and we end up at what is actually Vesuvio's exterior, but it's called Rhodes.
Yep.
And we go into Rhodes, and then we're immediately taken to an entire location that's on some sound set somewhere.
A big single shot.
It's an impressive single shot
intro.
We see the life of a cappuccino cup in that 15 minutes.
And one of the most impressive things about this movie is that it created a world in which there was like a coffee bar that had 250 people stocked in to hear spoken word and poetry.
This was 1993. This is the coolest thing happening in San Francisco.
This is what everyone assumed what was going on in coffee shops in San Francisco. So that's why I think it worked, which was like, no, absolutely, man. It's a Hepcat. Do you hear me? Ferlinghetti's coming on soon. And we're going to have it. Oh, do you have those beats, baby? Like, it was like, he created a world which was assumed that I just went with. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I'm like,
But a beautiful, beautiful insider thing about San Francisco is that location that they helicopter in on is famous for being the center of beat poetry in San Francisco.
That's where it is.
Jack Kerouac Alley is what that is. That's an actual alley.
Hundreds of people have pack in every, like on a Tuesday, they're there to imbibe what they're putting down. And yeah, we
Vesuvio is one of the first bars I ever snuck into.
Oh, good times.
I like the little balcony up.
Yeah, that's how you sneak in. You go immediately to the balcony, wait for the server to come to you, and then someone has to give up someone's dad's credit card.
Oh, there it is. Wait. First drink. How old at an establishment? How old were you?
At an establishment? Oh, it's 15 going on 16.
There it is.
Yeah.
I think I was like...
Yeah, O'Donohue is my first bar in the marina.
I think I was 22 the first time I like slipped into a place to do something, but I was probably drinking fairly regularly at like... I mean, not regularly, but, you know, there were beers around at like 18, 19, somewhere in that. Well, of course.
Actually, the first bar I ever went into was with you. It was Second and Geary. It's called Alpha Bar time.
The Buckshot.
The Buckshot.
The Buckshot, which is now...
It became the Alpha Bar,
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Oops.
Oh, the Buckshot, Across the street was Adi Dang PC Bang Studio. Did you ever go in there?
No.
Playing Counter-Strike.
No. That was a fairly short-lived trend. Those bars, those establishments.
In Korea, they're still going strong. Anyway, I wrote down a note here that said Metro with Eddie Murphy also had a very good intro to San Francisco, like helicopter pan-in shot. They came in over the Bay Bridge, and it was like, it had to have been a fall day. It was clear and just crisp, bright. And you could see the fog just stemming over the Outer Sunset District. And it was just like,
Metro's a movie I always meant to see. Like Eddie Murphy, San Francisco, like you think 48 Hours. It should be a good movie.
Well, let's put it on the list.
I've never seen it because I've heard of the bad reviews.
It's not. It's bad. It's mediocre. It's not.
Is it mediocre?
What happens?
Is it bad or mediocre?
It's mediocre because it's not bad. It's not like fun bad.
Not
because
fun,
they
bad.
Kind of, well, they take a turn for the serious and they're trying to follow that plot. And you're like, okay, they're doing the thing and there's a killer and we like Eddie Murphy. But it just gets procedurals. It gets bogged down in that. Okay. And it's not, they don't give themselves to like, oh, it's ridiculous for the answers that they go for. They kind of hold themselves to like real world, like, oh, no, there was evidence and whatever. And then it's just lazy and going to the next thing. Anyway.
Well, I have to say, the other thing about this movie is about that opening shot is that the opening song has always been, or just become one of my favorite little lighthearted songs.
What is that song?
The Laws.
Okay.
There she goes.
Oh, there she.
Copyright.
Just a little bit.
Oh my goodness.
There she goes again.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this movie, and again, that is another one of the things that just is like a teabag of the 90s. We were just steeped.
That song is like, saturated throughout the movie. Like, it is.
No, it's just the beginning and the end. The very beginning and the very end. That's the only time.
Oh, I feel like that song comes up like five times.
Maybe.
Like, it's a legit theme.
Very briefly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually in the car. He's driving by the butcher shop.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't a bad thing. This is just the narrative.
Anyway, I bring that up because it's at the heart of what I really love about this movie, in that it's just kind of lighthearted. It's not
very
serious. It doesn't try to be more than it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it tries to be a little more. We haven't even gotten past Rhodes yet. So
no. We're in intro shot still in the coffee shop. Yeah. And again, as I have said, the coffee shop, we immediately go in and his observational humor. Everybody, if you like this movie or not, you have to hinge it on his first joke about a large latte that he receives, where he says, "Hey, I ordered a large. Oh my gosh. And it's big." And then he complains about it immediately. Like, this was the 90s. Like, was. I mean,
cappuccino was a hip thing. References to the 70s are a hip thing. So Anthony mm-hmm. LaPaglia is dressed like a pimp. He comments on it. He's like, you look like Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch. No one on our show knows what Starsky and Hutch is.
Oh, that's not true.
Nobody.
I will say the one thing that irks me in this movie and gets to me, and it's a litmus test, is his repetitive line of hello.
Yes.
I could do without that.
At the time, that was great. That was it, in the same as observational
that
humor.
That was his
it
period.
Was like,
that was his.
Of the age, it was like, hey, I'm calling attention to this. And you're like, hey, isn't that so great? And this is one of the things that makes it not ageless, which is it was stuck.
That's like the only thing.
Look, you can say that, but then Two Princes from the Spin Doctors kicks up, and I'm like, this is completely of that age. Yeah. Like, it's stuck right in that age. You're like, okay, I know exactly what this is. I don't need to close my eyes and imagine. Like, no, it's exactly of that age, as is a lot of his humor, and I still like this movie.
Mike Myers, funny dude. Very funny dude. He's very funny in this movie.
Talented. Yeah. He is a talented individual.
And story-wise, we make fun of the cappuccino. We make fun of Anthony LaPaglia's costume. We make fun of the fact that Mike Myers, a.k.a. Charlie, he's afraid of commitment. He like Eddie Murphy in the 1992 movie Boomerang, like, will make up any excuse to not stay with a woman. And he's just... He's self-pitying himself, so he, despite the fact that he broke up with this chick, for whatever reason he made up, he still has a song being sad about it.
He's the victim.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the victim.
He's the victim in this case. And what, she stole his cat?
Yeah.
That's a quirky song. Yes.
She stole my heart and my cat.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Even suggesting that, like, I've been in some bad breakups, but I've never had a cat stolen mm-hmm. from me. Mm-hmm. That's rough. Yeah.
In that moment is a little tiny callback to like 3 minutes earlier, because he's talking to Anthony LaPaglia and he says, he's asked his friend, who's dressed like Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch, is asking, mm-hmm. you know, what was wrong with all these girls? Mm-hmm. And he goes through the list. And the final one, who he's singing, doing the beat poetry about, is he's like, she was a klepto. To this day, I still don't know where my cat is.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And then you get the call back in his actual poem where he's like, she stole my heart and my cat.
Yes.
So he makes reference to Tony, Anthony LaPaglia, that he's hanging out with his dad and his mom next week, and they're going to come over, watch soccer or football, depending on how you call it. And the next ends up wanting to bring his dad a haggis. So that's how we meet Nancy Travis, the love interest, the axe murderer. And
wait, said haggis, if I may. Back then, he calculates the haggis as $19.75.
They're heavy. They're heavy.
That is, even for then, let me calculate this real quick. Please. That is $33.64.
That sounds about right in today's San Francisco currency. Yeah.
That is, yeah, San Francisco haggis is out of control.
God damn.
It's imported.
It is imported. That's, yeah.
Have you ever had haggis?
I have not.
I have had haggis at a Scottish Rite
Me too.
Festival.
Good, bad? What's going on, guys?
It's an acquired taste.
Honestly, when I got to it, I fucking loved it.
I loved it too.
Great. I really liked it.
I mean, I had it with the chain with the addition, the Scottish addition of pouring a little scotch over it as a sauce, and it's actually wonderful.
Okay,
yeah,
I would try haggis. I've not been in a position to, but I would. So, on that note, he buys the haggis for $19.75. $33.50 is what Kai is saying. And we immediately go to Mike Myers as Stuart. And it's also in the vein of Eddie Murphy, very funny. Mike Myers playing multiple characters is always a great time.
The multiple characters thing, again,
got the Scottish Wall of Fame.
Oh, and he took it and ran with.
S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y.
God. Night. It is Nancy Travis, I believe. No. Yeah.
That's the love interest,
Harriet. No, the wife.
Oh, the wife.
What's her name?
No. What is her name?
Amanda Plummer? Jesus. No,
Amanda Plummer is the sister.
That's the sister. Brenda Fricker. That's her. She's
delightful.
Fantastic.
You've turned into a right sexy bastard. You know that?
She straight out slips Tony the tongue at the end of the evening.
Oh, my God. He, perfect.
Mike Myers is awkward. Tony is just, he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's literally being molested by his friend's mom in front of his friend.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is, to me, this interaction is my favorite part of the movie, is the family where Mike Myers plays the different, the dad and himself is what I'm here for. Where I have known, Hakey, you have known individuals that are very Scottish, that live in San Francisco, that have sought out the place that, the butcher shop that Harriet works, which is Meats of the World.
Yes. Yeah, it's like Columbus and Hyde, right?
Yeah, I would have to ask this individual that that producer Hay, I don't know, has spoken to since then, but this rung so true because I knew, like, oh yeah, there's Scottish Americans, and it's like, oh no shit, that yeah, there are these people there.
So I totally take it back. I do now remember how I first got introduced to this movie.
Yeah, break it down.
Well, no, I mean it's through the individual that we are referencing.
Okay.
Oh.
It was because of the Scottish side of it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great mystery, y'all.
Oh, a mystery. Brian Masson. That's his name. Wait a minute. Just for a second. Wait.
Audible shoulder shrug.
It is. No, if you could bring for a second, because this is good pod. This is good pod, everybody.
All right, break it down. Hakey. Make a good pod.
Hakey, go with it. This is good
Roll
pod.
Roll homie.
Why haven't you spoken to this ritual?
No.
Please.
I'm editing this out.
No, you're not.
I'm not
going
into that story.
Oh. Right. Has he never spoken to you about this again?
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I was on Facebook urging this individual to apologize to you for that.
I'm not even mad about it. I'm just like, it was more amusing than anything else, but
it's not amusing. It was not. That wasn't amusing.
No. It wasn't amusing. I, after taking a step back, am amused by the whole thing.
Of course. Of course.
I just, you know, I don't know. I don't. It's not. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. You guys.
Three,
I've just
two. And we meet a kid with a giant head. What is his story? So do oh we is he Mike Myers' little brother, or is he just being babysat?
I identify with the large-headed individual in this movie. As I mean, I don't know if I've said it before. I have a large cranium. I wish I was alive in the time of phrenology, because I would probably be some kind of court-appointed philosopher or economic.
We would be crazy not to listen to this man.
Look at his head. The brain pan is amazing. No, but I am not. I live here and now, so I'm disregarded.
You've got a great short story, a cheap plug on thebosley.net about your big head.
I have a big head, but yes,
it's pretty like, great. Hey,
all of the head-related jokes I identify with, because yeah, in high school, a dear friend of mine now, who at the time it seemed just like this is offensive, this is the worst, nicknamed me as Head, and other kids started calling me Head. Kid, people, no!
Pants. Like,
is Head his little brother by 20 years?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Okay.
Was that his brother?
Yeah. I wouldn't say 20 years.
Because the head is always sitting next to another woman, whether it's at the wedding or the actual anniversary. He's always sitting next to this woman. They're always doing these facial gestures like, I think this is funny. I don't know.
They never explicitly say what relationship he has to the family, but I guess the implication he's just a much younger brother.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you meant that was his actual younger brother.
Oh,
no.
That's the story.
Sorry.
No. Charlie's little brother by 20 years.
He is. And, oh, God, where is the, I wish I had it in front of me about the, here it is. Mike Myers as the dad reads a monologue that I can never get out of my head when he comes over to the house.
Oh, it's a well-known fact.
The Queen, the Vatican, the Gettys, the Rothschilds, and Colonel Sanders before he went tits up. Oh, I hated the Colonel with his wee beady eyes and that smug look on his face.
Oh, you're gonna buy my chicken?
Dad, how can you hate the Colonel? Because he puts addictive chemical in his chicken that makes you crave it fortnightly. Smart ass. I mean, just,
it's a great scene. This movie is a collection of fantastic scenes.
Yeah. He's off on his Lyndon LaRouche rubbish again.
I would go for a sequel that just deals with the father sort of renegotiating a remortgage.
A clump style situation.
Yeah, just Mike Myers playing most of the other key parts, and just the dad renegotiating the house in a San Francisco that has gone out of control in real estate. You know what I mean? Like, that's what the focus would be.
Stuart
would
be like 112 right now.
He would
probably.
He would at that.
Probably.
He would at that. Look at the size of that boy's head. It's like an orange on a toothpick. I feel all this. I have a large noggin.
You'll be crying yourself to sleep on your huge pillow.
Gigantic pillow. Oh my god. And then we also learn his mom is into the tabloids, which is our really like first act push into the heart of this movie.
The Weekly World News, the eighth largest circulated publication in the world, is a real newspaper. And I'm surprised that they got a name drop in this.
This paper has facts.
Have any of you guys ever purchased a Weekly World News? Back in the 80s and the 90s, it is a fantastic publication. It is what The Onion is today.
This was a real thing?
Absolutely, yes. Bat Boy. Google right now, Weekly World News Bat Boy. Like, it's just the craziest headlines you'd see weekly.
It's Fox News now.
This was tabloids that wasn't covering, like, you know, Joan Collins and whoever was on Dynasty, like that nonsense.
There's another thing in there that is not does not exist anymore, and I think it's the soccer game that they're watching, which is Scotland versus the U.S. and it's the World Series of Soccer.
World Series of Soccer. I don't think that was real.
I was like, oh, I was like, this is fake. But I looked it up. It existed from 91 to 94.
Okay.
That was a thing.
Yeah.
And I was trying to discern the effects and things from it, but it subsided and it is confusing to sort of read about on Wikipedia. But thank you, Wikipedia. And again, everybody, if you have some spare money from a tax return, please give it to Wikipedia, because if they get owned by a corporation, then things change and it gets different. Everybody, we all trust Wikipedia to some degree. We know that it's edited by community content editors, but it can get bad. Anyway,
I'll cancel so the subscription World to the Weekly World News. Then.
Oh,
but what about the Weekly World News Garth Brooks juice diet?
Yeah, that's a thing.
So they go from there, and I forget exactly how, but Mike Myers has to go to the butcher shop because his father was a butcher. He has retired. And Harriet, his love interest, Harry, is working at a butcher shop, Meats of the World, which can be found as a storefront. It was not a real store, but it is a store. There is this might be a Cushion Kai first or a movie first. There is a meat montage where they are cutting up different meats.
Charlie goes in there talking about his dad was the butcher and he's offering to help her out. She's actually swamped for whatever reason now. There's like 20 people in this place trying to get meat. It's the only place
they want meat.
It's the only place they can get their delicatessen. Anyway, he goes back there and there are times where he knows what he's doing, and there are times where he has no idea what's going on. And then he's
just having a good time.
85% of the time after that, he's Mike Myers just with meat. He makes the meat moo. He does a scene from Alien. He gets erotically turned on cutting bacon. This all makes Nancy Travis and the rest of us laugh.
There's some head cheese. There's some other stuff.
He's giving a cow side a massage.
Oh, yes. Yeah, all the meat massage. Yeah. The meat, which again, I think if you tried to film this in San Francisco today, there would be people coming in, not just protesting you, but you might be arrested or indicted on something. Like, I don't know if you can do this today if you are not ethnically Polish. You know what I mean? Like, it might be a problem. It would be. That's what I'm saying. Ethnically arrested.
Most likely.
No one's saying anything. I'm just saying there was racial violence. So they would be taken down. They do after that. They have a date night after that. They have it at night out on the town.
And it's a lot of Mike Myers improvising. And, you know, it's funny.
Oh, fun aside.
They have good chemistry.
They do have good chemistry.
They do have good chemistry. Fun asides, fun stuff out in the town, lots of great SF. Like, again, guys, if you like I will give this the same christening that I did Mrs. Doubtfire, where it's like, if you like minor sort of like San Francisco side pieces, like you want to see Dennis Richmond when he was coming up, like it's just sort of like, no, there's pieces that you want to see if you grew up there.
So then the Palace of Fine Arts.
Yeah, they go to the Palace of Fine Arts, and two Russian sailors happen to be walking by, and they hit on her in Russian in front of Charlie, and he doesn't know what's going on. However, she sassily responds to them in Russian. And he's like, oh, you speak Russian. There you go. That's all exciting. And then they go forward. They go to her house for some coffee. Or is it tea? Regardless, they end up sleeping together. And that's when we meet Rose the next morning.
Oh, Rose. Who, everybody, this is not a spoiler because this movie came out a number of years ago.
Yeah.
She is the trouble in this relationship. Rose is the sister that has been killing the...
all of fiance. Nancy Travis's boyfriends, husbands.
All of them.
Yeah.
And that causes her to appear in the tabloid magazines and real newspapers of, hey, there's a black widow out there, which that's the crux of this movie. We don't know who the real killer is, but now we have seen it. They're in bed together. The next morning, Mike Myers.
Who's in bed together?
Oh, no. Well, he gets out of bed. Yeah. He goes to the shower and opens it up. He thinks it's Harriet, but it's Rose. And he shouts, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it's Rose, the killer.
She offers him the world's greatest breakfast later. She's like, you know, how about bacon and eggs and some this, then that, and the other thing. And he's like, yeah, all right, that sounds great. And then he's treated to Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops.
And she's like,
a big fan of Fruit Loops. He is in on the Fruit Loops. And we show
they're
the
high in fiber.
They are high in fiber.
We show the box of Fruit Loops too. So sponsorship there. Hmm. I mean, that's not an accident at this point in the 90s that you have paid for that. Mm-hmm. So good job on them. They got some Fruit Loops money. And then that is when we get to the most 90s thing ever. This is when the Spin Doctors Two Princes fires up. And they're going to Alcatraz, and it's like, hit it, you did, hold it, burn it, burn it. And they're just like, they're on.
It's Mike Myers and it's Anthony LaPaglia, and they're on a police commissioned ship. Speedboat?
Oh my God.
Speedboat. When they could just take the actual tour that everyone else is on. However, they meet up with the tour, and we're treated to Phil Hartman.
Oh, guys. Rest in peace, Phil Hartman. Rest in peace. I fucking am sad, especially when anytime in a movie that they have to pull in your garden variety straight men to react to any of our golden comedians where it is, we don't have Phil Hartman. He is one of the greatest just play it straight guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been robbed of that. And I am saddened that he, via mental health issues for his wife or whatever, claimed it from us. But we have been robbed as a cultural community of just enjoying comedy. Like, he was fucking amazing.
Yep.
He's great in this role, and he's the tour guide of Alcatraz. And he starts telling, you know, this is this is that, this is solitary.
May I read?
Please.
Get to it. May I read his monologue?
Please.
Now, this is something the other tour guides won't tell you. In this particular cell block, Machine Gun Kelly had what we call in the prison system a bitch. And one night, in a jealous rage, Kelly took a makeshift knife or shiv and cut out the bitch's eyes. And if this wasn't enough retribution for Kelly, the next day, he and four other inmates took turns pissing in the bitch's ocular cavities. This way to the cafeteria. Fucking, you can't do it, Lionel.
Ranger Sir John Lionel Johnson, aka Ranger Vicky.
God.
Everyone calls me Vicky.
Everyone calls me Vicky. That's right. I miss that gentleman, and we have been robbed of decades of comedy, solid comedy.
Agreed.
From that gentleman. Oh, sorry. That got. I'm sorry that happened. Right after that, we go to, and this has a personal bit of history for myself. We go to the Fog City Diner after that.
Yep.
They're there. They're hanging out. I want to say this.
We meet a young Debbie Mazur.
Yes. Young Debbie Mazur. Mike Myers is there with Harriet, and they're hanging out, and he is uncovering. In a narrative sense, he does appropriately spoon out like exposition at certain points about like, but wait, and then we knew the killer this, and it's fine. He does an admirable job of that. But going inside the diner, the Fog City Diner, I went to before my junior senior / prom. I was a senior at the time, and I was there. And we had to go. We had to take a car down towards the actual, like, it was on a pier. Somebody's mother worked for like a wine company that had options on time at a certain whatever. So they had a like a viewing room. So it was like, oh, cool, it'll be here. And I went with a platonic friend to prom for my senior, what have you.
There's a surprise.
And going, oh my God. And going there, God, there was a group of like 30 of us that were all in the diner. And like we ordered, it was like, I want a burger. I want fries. It was super basic. And it took like an hour for everyone's food to come out because they were like inept. But we were there, and I remember sitting across from the person that I like really wanted to ask. Oh my God. She was there and she had her own agenda and whatever. And like looking back, I don't know why I didn't ask her out. That really was a bummer. I don't remember.
Ain't that life?
It is. Crystal.
I've got those stories.
Crystal, yeah. Musante. That was her name. Everybody get text her. But no, but I just was like, yeah, why didn't I? It was the biggest example in like, you're a fucking coward. Like, morally, like, why didn't you make an effort? I had such a crush.
Oh, hindsight.
And I took a platonic friend and we danced. It was great and whatever. But we went to this on the pier, and it was a gorgeous view of the bay, and there was dancing and what have you. And again, Dan Steiner, my buddy, we had branded his song as Dancing Queen, and then that came on, and then we went and got him from the antechamber and like pushed him onto the dance floor where we were dancing. But because it was the junior senior prom, my ex-girlfriend was there who had moved on, and she had shaved all of her hair off. And there was a moment where it was like, am I going to see her, or is this going to happen? I was like, no, I hadn't seen her the whole evening. And then coming in during the Dancing Queen thing where we were all encouraging Dan, I just like face to face, like, boop, like was just face with that. Or like, hey, how's it going? And they were talking about communism and stopping the government from being awful. It was like, yeah, cool, like the song is going on, and I just sort of like slid around them, and it was like, God, you've made so many mistakes. So many mistakes, like what the fuck. Oh my God, was that painful. Anyway, so this movie brought that up. Like the Fog City Diner was like, oh no, I went there before my like, this was like, you for San Francisco, it was like, oh no, I was looking at it like, oh this my, this was exactly. And I apologize to all the people mentioned.
The Fog City Diner still exists. It's quite expensive. I've eaten there several times over the last 10 years.
It's now next door to Levi's Plaza. Yeah. So they
don't get baked oysters there.
Oh, I won't.
Wait, it's turned into quite a fancy place. Like it's depicted as this, you know, like just a straight up diner. It's now a pretty, you know, like it's a higher end eating establishment, which makes sense for its real estate. But
at the time, it was one of those like they hand you a menu and it's like it's like a manual to put together a nuclear bomb. It's like. Like 12 layers thick and hard and coat, like what you have to do it underwater. Like you should not be serving. Your menu needs to be two long pages. That is it.
They've changed a bit. Like that. Oh, it is now. God. It is now a higher end.
They're a
like,
fancy diner.
Yeah.
They
anyway.
Fancy
yeah.
Diner.
No. I've eaten there several times. It brought back memories for me as well. Yeah.
So. They leave the diner eventually, and we are treated to a montage of a relationship that is happening. They are dating. They are having fun. They are showering together. They are not showering together. Rose is involved sometimes. Sometimes Rose is not involved.
Indeed.
And then we get to a point where we talk about the Mrs. X again. And some names are brought up. The Russian martial artist and
yes.
Plumber
oh,
Ralph.
Yeah, they're at the parents' house.
Well, he hasn't put together yet. She mentions several times various aspects that the audience is maybe able to connect back to that story, but he hasn't realized yet. But this all comes to a head when he's like, I'm going to introduce her to my parents. And we arrive at a scene where the second time we come to the parents' house, and she arrives, and
mom's in love. Dad sneaks up behind her. She puts him in a jujitsu hold.
You have the face of a wee angel.
Stuart!
He's here. Put your pants on.
Stuart doesn't have any pants on. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Head brings him his pants upon demand.
Yeah.
Head! Pants?
No!
It's me, everybody. I identify with the needing pants part. Oh, God. And... yeah, the girl. Yeah, he puts a move on Mike Myers' father, and she apologizes like, "That's just the training. That's just where I'm from." Yeah. It kicked in.
Yeah,
it's not
good. I like this one. She's a real filly.
Mom immediately takes to her and starts showing her old baby pictures of Mike Myers when you know he's bathing and whatnot. All the embarrassing stuff.
Show her the one where he shit his pants in Niagara Falls.
I love embarrassing photos. I have a photo that has come up twice for old girlfriends, and then my wife hasn't seen it because I went into that album and then removed it.
Good. Yeah. Yes, smart.
There was a photo in the albums because I would get into this phase where they would come over and we'd be sitting and talking, and then the album would come out. My parents are both nudists, or at least both of them used to be nudists.
Oh my.
And
it's very European.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I know it. It's just my grandfather run Sonnengarten in the Black Forest. It was a rehabilitation center for folks. Like, they were nudists. They ran in the woods. They ate muesli in the morning. And it was just like, it was all hands on. And fucking this photo I would dread because we were like, we would go and
do on
like
in these photos. That's what you dreaded.
They would. Hold on. You would go and do these camping trips and beach trips and what have you. Like, we would go out and do and be in nature. But there was one, and it's a photo of like 25 people. We were in a Point Reyes beach, and all of us were naked, like just completely naked. And there's a group photo of us. And just, we would get to this thing in the photo album, and it would be like, is that you naked with the rest of your family? And I would have to like,
no.
I would have to Trump-esque explain away reality where it's like, well, that was clearly Photoshop. Like, that didn't exist. It was just like so incredibly embarrassing that it was like, yeah, no, whatever. But like, oh my God.
It's just the failing New York Times trying to get a headline.
Like, this is part of my childhood for this of embarrassing mother in San Francisco. Like, I identify with this so embarrassingly much, and that, oh, fuck. Anyway,
this is followed by...
She asks if she's lived in San Francisco her whole life, which leads to, no, not at all, she's moved around, which furthers the plot of, is this person the axe murderer that you've read about in your tabloids?
All the details are starting to match up.
Mm-hmm.
They are. They're going forward.
And he asked Tony to do a check in the database, the World Police database, and he's like, sure, whatever.
At the beginning of the movie, Charlie says to Tony, his friend, he's like, once things get going with Harriet, he says, I really like this girl. I have this pattern where I freak out when I get too close. Stop me from making a mistake. So... he now comes back to Tony and says, I think she's Mrs. X. And Tony's like, okay, he's freaking out. And so...
Tony's an enabler. He allows it to happen. Mm-hmm. And he does conclude an investigation, or begins an investigation, that we won't find the answer to for another 20 minutes. However, at some point, Mike Myers does what he does. He breaks up with Harriet, and she gives him the 90s cold shoulder, and we were treated to another montage where Mike Myers decides he needs to win her back.
Well, I mean, we're skipping over some great parts. Okay, we have the introduction of Alan Alda.
Alan Alda.
Oh, I forgot.
Who is one of the greatest characters in this. He is the, he is the, all right, wait, let's, yeah. All right.
Sorry,
all right,
guys,
all right.
I'm out of notes. No. That is the
That's all right. I mean, I'm doing this all from memory, but, we have one of the great, monologues in this thing where Anthony LaPaglia reveals on his character that he became a cop because he had this glorious vision of all the like TV cops from the 70s, that being a cop would be like, you know, chasing criminals and hanging off of a helicopter. And Alan Alda, who's, is that right? Is it Alan?
No, it's not Alan Alda.
No, is it? Who is that?
I'm working on that. Yeah.
Oh,
God damn it.
Anyway, so LaPaglia, he's into the gestalt of
Arkin.
Being the
Alan Arkin. I am so sorry.
Alan Arkin, yes.
Close. Yeah,
Alan.
All right.
Very close.
There are Alans out
Jesus
there that
Christ.
We respect, that we mix
the,
up.
AA. It's two AAs. Anyway, Alan Arkin, fabulous actor, one of my favorite actors of all time, is playing his boss. And, you know, Tony just has this idea that being a cop is going to be like he's a screwball cop in the...
He references Starsky and Hutch again. Yeah. He's like, why aren't you the hard-nosed lieutenant? Why don't you, like, start cutting... You use racial slurs at me. Yeah. Like, me. He's like,
somebody,
you're
a
fantastic
a
cop, you know? Yeah, like, yeah. Why would... Yeah. You only do your job.
I didn't think cop work would be so much paperwork. He's like, well, I hear what you're saying, but paperwork is an important part of our job. I know it's not quite as fun as what you're describing, but...
He's the boss you want to have regardless of what job you have.
They bake that element into this, the cop element, right in, where, again, it's goofy observational humor, it's fun San Francisco stuff, and then it is... Yeah, there's a murder mystery going on right under our eyes.
Yeah. So anyway, where were we at with the... We come to Tony is kind of trying to figure out what's going on with Mrs. X because he thinks that this is crazy, but he's just going to do it for Charlie.
Charlie's having separation anxiety, and finally he gets a phone call from his man Tony, and he's like, "No, someone just confessed to this plumber's murder." And Charlie immediately runs out, and he begs for Harriet's forgiveness, and she's like, "No," and he's like, "Come on," and she's like, "Fuck you," and he's like, "What?" And then he brings the band together, and they do they serenade her from the window, and life is good again.
Yeah.
And Charlie is preparing for the parents' 30th wedding anniversary.
Unlove, Ed.
Yeah. It's a fantastic little performance.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe Hickey can squeeze in a soundbite or two here and there.
Oh, please. Yeah. Please squeeze something into this, because we're so post... anybody like what was it, Universal that produced it? Please,
TriStar.
Please sue TriStar,
which is now Sony.
Please sue us. Please sue us. Just for whatever it is. Just like, come on in.
No.
You won't. You don't have time.
Oh, the views.
Just
no.
Put that in.
Oh, the views.
No. Anyways,
put the clip in.
What a publicity thing.
How did this get made? Put clips in for their thing.
Yeah. They're asking. Reviewing it like we are.
I know, but
you're allowed,
like,
you're allowed could... like what, 15 seconds?
No.
Yeah,
you're,
of course.
We'll talk about this another time. Anyways, we get to
we will not. Wait, this is a perfect opportunity. Like,
there's no time limit on it. You can't. You have to reference what you're talking about as regular APA guidelines.
We are referencing about
it. Can't be for commercial. You're not making money off of the subject. You're making...
They sell fucking Casper and the fucking, like, DraftKings. Like, they sell the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But why do they get to do that?
Because they're making references. They're using it as a reference.
We're doing the same thing.
Yes.
Why can we not do the same thing?
We can.
Why cannot Hickey just
we're working
slide
on that.
Under... While we're talking right now, the full Two Princes King song, like, why can that? Because
we're not
happen?
Talking about the two songs.
We were.
We can talk about it. We can play it for like that 3 seconds.
Yeah, we're talking about that montage again. And they.
Anyway,
I'm just saying.
All right. You're taking us
taken.
Off the fucking topic.
The point, point is taken.
We're afraid. Yeah, yeah. We're afraid. Yeah. That's the only key. That's what we're talking about.
So. So he wins her back. He wins her back, and life is good. And and we come to the 30th wedding anniversary of Charlie's parents.
Yeah. Nice little monologue by Stewart. Best woman I've ever had. Best woman I'll ever have. Here's to another 30 years.
We both Everybody said cheers. I do. And we haven't agreed on a single thing since. But one thing I could say is it could have been worse.
Could have been worse.
All right.
When at this point, I am forgetting, my memory is a little loose. When do we get to them after the proposal?
Mm-hmm.
Do we get to the honeymoon suite that is in the Marin Headlands?
This is the proposal, and then there's another 15 minutes of stuff that happens, and then we get to their wedding, and then they go to the Headlands.
Okay, the Headlands I have to bring up for a moment, because I know intimately, not just from living and growing up in San Francisco, but I used to work as a camp counselor in the Marin Headlands for the YMCA, and I used to bike from the Richmond District to there and then back, so I know it intimately, and the landscape that they show is right where I used to take my camp kids.
Yeah, Highway 1.
And it is, there is not a hotel there.
No.
And in fact,
no, the hotel
is
a
matte painting. It's great.
Yeah.
Of course, there is not a hotel there. And that wouldn't exist. There are laws that would be against it existing. But yeah, I remember biking over that for that. And it's like, yeah, no, dig, of course.
They genuinely do show the real Highway 1, though. This isn't Toronto.
They do.
This is,
they
yeah.
do.
And yeah, everything's a location shot. Anything interior is on whatever soundstage, wherever.
Yeah.
But all exteriors are San Francisco or the Bay.
I remember, and I'll just impart this because I don't have another forum to do it, but there was a girl, I think her name was Abby. She was
there's
in
so much about Guy tonight.
I know. I think her name was Abby. She was in another camp, but like you'd have to deal with the other kids from thing. Like she was 10, 11, whatever it was. She was so sweet and great. And then her younger brother had like disciplinary problems. And then she had a thing about like, oh no, they're giving him medicine to deal with it. And it was like, yeah, he had like an ADHD thing and they were trying to deal.
I feel like this movie is a key that's unlocking your like memory.
Oh, absolutely. Not unlocking. Like these live with me. I could free point tell you any of these, but I just have to tell you, I felt so bad because she was like the most like moral and honorable camper that I had ever met for the YMCA summer camp thing. And she was trying to lead a group on an adventure down towards the beach. And they were doing a game and it was like, hey, we're going to do this. Like three people stand here. Three people stand here. We'll toss a ball back and forth. And she was standing on like a driftwood log, but it was like a whole tree trunk like thing. It was a huge trunk, like 4 feet across. It just washed up on the beach. She was standing up on it, and I wasn't there. This was imparted to me by another camper, evidenced by her not being there. She slipped off it. The tide came up, and it rolled over her leg and broke her femur and tore some of her tendons. I forget exactly what, but it was just the saddest thing I'd ever encountered. I'll parry this with biking over the bridge. I used to do this with another camper. While we were biking back and forth over the bridge, like we'd meet up in the morning, one time somebody in a car waved at us, and my friend waved back. He was like, hey!
Yeah.
And my friend lost his balance and fell off his bike. And so now whenever I drive over the bridge,
you try and wave at bikers.
I wave at bikers. They'll lose their
I've balance. Experienced this actually with
oh my god, yeah. Yes you did. Yeah. You've seen this. Yeah. You saw this,
I did.
Right?
I did.
Like you fucking saw this. And I just want to recreate that for somebody where it's like, hey buddy, check your speed. Hmm. Check your speed.
You missing San Francisco, bud?
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah, I get it.
go. It's warm here. It was 91 degrees today, and it was cool comparatively. Oh, Jesus.
Where are we in the movie?
I don't know.
Well, they just got married. They check into the hotel.
Quick pause. I was trying to. I imparted to Brian to just fucking apologize. I did.
I'm not waiting for an apology. It's more like more the statement that this is a personality flaw in him. Where if I gave him another chance, it would just happen again. You know, that's it. It's not like I'm waiting for an apology. It's just like I just need to protect myself from personalities like that. You know,
that is the healthiest fucking thing I've ever heard from you. But at the same time, I was doing that at the token of you need to apologize for that. For wherever you were and your relationship was, that was not right.
It was always just a pattern in the relationship where he, you know.
It was. It was. But I was advocating that, dude, that wasn't right. Yeah. And you should make right for that. That's all I was saying.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Continue, gentlemen. I don't even know where we're at anymore.
We checked into the hotel.
Well, okay, so now,
I'm learning a lot about you, gentlemen.
We can talk about this shit, but is this for the show? No. I'm editing anything about that out. Anyway, we end up. So Tony at the last minute, as they're on their way to their honeymoon, Alan Arkin comes into the squad room and throws Tony up against the wall and says, "Look, Paisan, you've been sticking your head, sticking your nose into things you shouldn't have been. I got news for you. The Black Widow case, the person who confessed to that confessed to a few other murders." And Tony's like, "Oh, I knew it. He's like, "Yeah. Turns out he confessed to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and
some other name.
Yeah, so stupid. Tony realizes right at the last minute that he might have been wrong and this might actually be Mrs. X. So what does he do? He can't get a hold of Charlie, so he charters a Cessna with the best pilot in the world, Stephen Wright.
Before he does that, though, he faxes out the photo from the wedding.
Yeah.
To a judo school, a plumbing facility in some other spot, and they all confirm, yes, that's Harriet. This woman married my friend who's now dead.
Yeah.
And then he charters the plane.
And now he's in a Cessna with Stephen Wright, who's amazing. He's like, "You've done this before, right?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, tons of times." Pause. Never at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fun scene in the 90s.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And it is past.
Yeah. And now, at one point, Stephen Wright even falls asleep as they're flying.
Oh, man. I was having such an amazing dream.
Yeah. He goes into his, like, I dreamt I was born 8.5 months premature, and the doctor started beating me. Yeah. It's a 90s scene.
This kind of humor is why I love this movie so much. It just makes me laugh.
It's a lot of throwaway scenes
that just are magnificently strung together.
Phil Hartman's scene could be totally throwaway if he was not like a culturally beloved.
That's what's
icon.
So wonderful about this movie is that it doesn't try to be anything more than a vehicle for wonderful little comedic scenes.
I wish that Mike Myers was constrained to try and make these kinds of things again, but he has to either hit the, well, I'm going to make a $3 billion worldwide or nothing, and it kind of sucks.
I don't think he was that far out. Like, again, this...
Wayne's World was way smaller than
Austin Powers.
Shrek
was the turning point for him, you know. So.
And we're still that's still the 21st century. Yeah, the 2001 is when Shrek happens.
Yeah,
Prior to that, he
was just a good comedian, and then he became the blockbuster. So.
Wayne's World was a big deal, and that's why this got made, and it was apparently very rushed.
5 weeks, did you say?
5 weeks is what I was told.
Kush told me that off pod. 5 weeks, which is really insane to do a fucking do a movie in that amount of time. That is unreasonable.
Yeah. So.
Especially for this amount of money and that scale, like that is they did some good work. Especially if there was green screen. character involved. That's fucking crazy. And then sadly since and we will I will put this on now instead of the end of the pod. Mike Myers has from all reports and everything I've read is super difficult to work with.
Really?
I've just there was a Dieter movie that got derailed because he wanted more control over it. There are Austin Powers movies that have gotten off track. He has not appeared in anything else besides Trek products because he is difficult and controlling to work with. And I get it because he is. Look,
he created these characters. Like, I mean, I will validate that. At least
the last big thing he did was the Love Guru, and because well, that bombed, he hasn't really been in anything major since.
Yeah.
He still would have been a box office draw, and people get that. People have, there are, listen,
look,
night and day exists.
There's a genuine criticism.
Still makes movies. I'm just saying, he is difficult to work with on that.
There's a genuine criticism for somebody who's difficult to work with, and, you know, you should, if you're a fantastic artist, you should still strive to be a human being and all that. But at the same time, I can totally validate, you know, if you created this character like Dieter or something, and then, you know, you put it in the hands of a studio and they start going like, no, well we're thinking this is what the focus group says. I can totally understand being difficult at that point, you know?
I completely understand it at that scale. And, I like Mike Myers. I hope he works again. Wasn't he working in that game? Wasn't he on the Gong Show? Didn't he have a character?
Damn, I don't know.
Did you guys not see this?
I didn't.
He went undercover as a character as like, oh, Marty Deal on the Gong Show. Oh, this. And it was Mike Myers, but he was wearing prosthetics in this.
When was the Gong Show redone recently?
Maybe it wasn't the Gong Show. I don't know. But he was on a network
weird
like game show.
The last time I saw him in anything
was in Glorious Bastards, right?
He was in Glorious Bastards.
Yeah.
Hey, Keith,
you didn't see that? He was great as Hitler. Sorry.
The last time I saw him, it was the Monty Python, the last Monty Python live thing where they live streamed to a bunch of movie theaters. And and they did a live stage show.
I wish that was more popular with people.
Well, I mean, so I bought tickets and I went to see this live broadcast. And they brought him online.
Tell us what it was like.
Well, I mean, it was a good show, but it was a bit awkward because they brought Mike Myers on stage. Like there was they brought cameos of a few comedians, and Mike Myers very obviously
General Ed Fenech.
They had
Inglourious Basterds. Fuck you, bitches.
What was he?
General Ed Fenech.
Oh, fuck yes.
All right.
Oh, man. I didn't
remember that. Yeah.
He was fucking in that? I have to watch it again.
Yeah. He's going to be in Bohemian Rhapsody, too, as Ray Foster.
I guess he's making appearances. But anyway, they brought him on stage, and it was really clear that they didn't tell him what to do beforehand, and he was just really awkwardly on stage with Monty Python. You can tell that they were his heroes, and he could just kind of, all he did on stage was sort of gush about how much of an honor it was to be there with him. But then he was sort of a deer in the headlights about, I don't know what I'm doing here.
That's unfortunate. Jeez. I thought you were joking. I didn't know he was in.
I didn't either. Yeah.
Oh, gee, that I'm going to have to watch it again. I had the honor of typing on the same word processor that Inglourious Basterds was on.
I thought you knew.
That is
how embarrassing.
Jesus. towards the end of this movie, because we have been talking about it for like 20 minutes, Rose throws an axe at Mike Myers' crotch on the roof of a hotel in the Headlands that does not exist, because I was trying to highlight, like, I went up there every day for, you know, a few months. That luxury hotel in the Marin Headlands mm-hmm. does not exist.
That hotel is a Scottish joke.
It is.
Yeah. Again, it's a callback to the whole beat poetry stuff, and it's
Poets Corner.
Yeah. Well, Poets Corner was the club in the beginning, right?
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
Earthquake.
What?
But was there an earthquake?
Yeah, or are you shaking your foot?
No, I'm tapping.
No, you ain't tapping that hard. That was an earthquake.
Oh, we'll look on the seismic indicator if there's an earthquake. Either way, that is discovered, and then we find out that his fiance / girlfriend is not the killer, but is their sister, and the police are involved, and it starts to work itself out in a pretty procedural, murder mystery comedy-esque way.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's like, yeah.
There's a rooftop chase. He falls up. He falls down. At one point, Travis gets arrested by accident. And then eventually it wraps up in a nice little package where Rose is arrested.
Tony finally arrives on the scene and completely misreads the situation and corners Harriet or brings Harriet out of the locked closet she's in and then mm-hmm. starts to interrogate her
mm-hmm.
like mm-hmm. cop movie style, completely ignoring the sounds of a
chase on the roof.
Well,
Charlie locked her in the closet.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlie locked her in the closet, and that's when he found the note that was written in his name saying, like, I fear the commitment. I gotta leave you, blah, 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 blah.
He's being framed, yeah.
And,
it was right there.
That's when we meet Rose, cue the rooftop chase scene. We've just discussed all of this. The movie ends on there she goes.
Well, he has a final...
There she goes again.
Chasing so, through my
brain. I'm glad you guys like this movie, but this movie was some bullshit. In fact, we learned a lot about Kai tonight than we did this movie.
Oh, man. Wait, more bullshit about Kai. Hakey, did you see any movies at the Coronet?
Of course. I saw... You know when they re-released Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we were.
I saw all of those at the Coronet. Yeah.
I waited out front of the Coronet mm-hmm. for episode 2. Not 1. Episode 1 I saw in the Stonestown Galleria.
Hilarious. Wait, episode what? No, I'm talking about the re-release of episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, the re-release.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing the previews for the re-release at something.
That was middle school.
And it was like, you've only seen Star Wars like this, and they had a small screen, like
exactly.
a small screen on screen.
Yeah.
And the X-Wing came screaming out on the Dolby system that they had that was, again, anybody that went to the Coronet, way too loud. It was way too loud. I saw a cliffhanger there. The helicopter
I think I did too.
Vibrations made my lungs, like, it was vibrating. It was like, oh, my God. Because you have a bad space, you're turning up the volume. I'm like, yes, you did. Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm.
And fucking when that X-Wing came screaming out of that small thing to be like, yeah, they're coming back, I think semen came dribbling out of my leg. Like, that was
I just remember that.
Fucking amazing.
The audience agreed.
This is why I'm alive. Like, I'm like, this is why I'm like, that was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I remember episode 2 for the prequels. I remember holding seats in line. I was with Matt, my best buddy. We were waiting out. Yeah, you know. You fucking know. We were waiting out front, and we waited for like 2 days. And I remember we got like 20 cheeseburgers to like sustain ourselves, and they got gross by the end of hour 1. And we couldn't eat them anymore. And just we fell asleep, and people were drinking, and like I wasn't completely drinking yet. And we went in, and people were sword fighting down at the front because it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt and I had scripted out a lightsaber fight, but we didn't do it because we were too afraid to perform. But then we were saving seats, and I almost got a real fight with people that we had clearly marked off 19 seats that were 3/4 back, like in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we were picking our spot.
I absolutely sat in one of those seats.
A dude, do you think you were there? Were you there?
I know I was there.
Paul was there. You, dude, you were there. There is so much of our, Hickey, there is so much of our history that is intertwined.
Oh, yeah,
that
no.
I'm not conscious of, but
the lore goes
there was
deep.
A dude that steps over the seats from the back to try and sit there. I'm like, hey, buddy, get up. These are our seats. And he's like, fuck you. And it was like, I had to like, I've never fought anybody in my life, but I had to take two steps towards him and be like, get the fuck out of here.
I remember that.
And he had some words.
I remember
but
that.
He fucking walked away. And it was like, yeah, yeah, buddy. Especially because his friends were like, don't do it, don't do it. And then I think two people from Matt's team, I didn't know everybody, Q, Kush, but no, not everybody, like, I didn't know everybody, but...
You were still, you were a dozen deep at that point, so, like, we all yeah. saw that shit, dude, that mad respect, because like, I remember that shit vividly, like,
oh, shit.
Four of us stood up, and that guy saw what happened, and his friends saw what happened, and then they realized what was going on, so yes.
Get the fuck out of our seats, oh my god. Oh, anyway, the coronet.
I'm just imagining Kai and Matt, like... These people in line don't deserve our kind of artistry.
Oh, my God. And then I'll leave the last note with this of Kai and Matt. Of, I was working at, God, not the Excelsior. There's a movie theater that I worked at in the Presidio District. What is that one? It's a tiny...
The movie theater in the Presidio?
Yeah, no, not the Presidio. It's just outside of
what,
it.
In the Marina?
It's not the Galaxy. That's fantastic.
Oh, it's like 250 seats. It was during when
on what street?
Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a tiny theater up there.
I don't think it exists
anymore. There.
It's still there.
I worked there for a year, and we found some. Carpet compound where it's like you pour it down to keep the carpet glue. It's like carpet glue, basically.
Gross.
But it had the largest, this is flammable, beware warnings on it. And so it was just under the stairs, and you would take the ladder stairs up to the projection room, which is not like, you know what I mean? Like a wheelchair. It's not wheelchair accessible. Mm. We would go up there and play cards and smoke cigarettes and whatever. But people would just stand there and say and exclaim. But I remember one day I was like, hey, this is super flammable. So after work at like, 2:30 in the morning when you get off shift, I took two sort of caskets of it off site and we went home. And then the next day we're like, it was a Saturday. I was like, hey, dude, this is super flammable. Let's see. We poured it at Rossi Park into the gutter that runs along the field. Like, we just dumped all of it into it, and we lit it. And I think it was Matt that lit it because it burned some of the hair off the front of his face and hand off. It was a 17-foot
oh, that's what ball happened.
Of fire. Wow. Just fire. And we were near one of the gates and we just started running away because we filled
in the missing blanks in a Richmond Review article.
Oh my god. This wasn't like, it wasn't gonna light a tree on fire. It was just in a gutter. Yeah. You know what I mean? Near a field. Like, it wasn't gonna light it. But we were running because it was like, someone's gonna notice this. And as we were running out of the gate, a police car had pulled in up to the gate. And the lights were on.
Mm.
And I will never forget looking into the windshield, which reflected like the silhouette of me and a wall of fire behind me. And me just like frozen there for a moment. And Matt and I had a rendezvous point, but we both split and they didn't chase after us. But it was like, yes.
Well, that's been Cushion Consequences. Thanks for tuning in. We're on iTunes,
oh my
Stitcher.
God. Thank you for So I Married an Axe Murderer, just unlocking these old memories.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for plumbing the depths of your own things. But
that was my nickname in college.
Absolutely. But no, I just felt the need to share these things because I didn't rewatch the entire movie. And I was it didn't hold up for me. Like, this was not as amazing when I rewatched it.
This is definitely a different episode of the Cushion Kai mythology, but
it is
like
it's a true.
Like,
this is your third.
Like, I definitely laughed. I had a good time.
This movie for me is just, I don't see it as anything more than a vehicle for just some really good scenes and jokes, and it's just such a textbook framework that I think more movies should aspire to, you know. Not everything has to be an epic with a huge back universe. Like, you can just sometimes have a simple plot, simple conflict for one character, and builds a rich set of jokes around it.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. Hagee, would you recommend this movie to people?
I think we know the answer to that.
That's a yes. Yes. Kush, would you recommend this movie to people?
Meh, no. No.
Yeah, for myself, if you like San Francisco or Mike Myers, I would say double plus yes. Otherwise, like, I kind of don't.
I don't. Even though I'm not going to hate on it, but no, I wouldn't recommend
I'm not hating on it either, but yeah. Unless you have a connection to San Francisco or Mike Myers, like, yeah, it's kind of forgettable in the grand scheme, because those are the only things I like about it.
I want to point out that forgettable, and we're all able to quote many parts of this movie from memory.
I think that's a San Francisco thing, though.
But yeah, for me, it's required viewing because I was there. It's a time and place thing. So it's like, yeah, I'm right there. And guys, I just imparted to you some like deep, dark. Guys, yeah. I imparted some deep, dark.
Well, there's going to be heavy edits now to this.
But yeah, but they, no, don't edit this shit. Don't edit this shit. I'm just saying, like, that's what it is for me, but that's only a time and place thing. And other people might not get that because, yeah, that's what it triggered in me. Because just seeing and feeling and liking Mike Myers when I was in middle school. Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like if we reviewed Ace Ventura. It's sort of like, that was the best. It was like, yeah, that was the best because you were in middle school.
It fills a place of a movie where the movie as a whole might be forgettable, but it was just a vehicle for some really, like, we can all quote Ace Ventura, a few really good, like, things in there. Oh. Yeah.
Right.
Well, two out of three of us can.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, if you remove the expectation that the movie as a whole is some piece of art, it really was just a vehicle for some really good jokes. And
there was a friend of mine that was so good at an Ace Ventura impression, but then at some point in high school, he on some, I don't know if it was a dare or whatever, got a hand job from another friend of mine, and then I knew about it, and then I've never spoken to him again after that.
Are you? You're your own friend. You're your own friend. That's you. Media, you're talking about me.
Oh my God. All right, this has been Truth or Dare, Cushion Guy. Follow us on the web or not. Fucking hate us. You already do. You don't. You haven't sent us a fucking thing.
I am wildly confused.
And again, for the second week following, as we have said from our Labyrinth episode, we've got $1 million sweepstakes. So if you kill us and answer us the right question, we will send that on over to you. So this has been Kai. Rock on, Kush.
What the fuck? .com. TheBosley.net.
Sit, Bosley, sit.
Sometimes there's a sandwich that fell, and it's a mystery, but I like it.